what a treat this afternoon. Our first on this program as we are welcoming trumpeter Paul Merkello to the show. The Illinois native began his path to stardom in the late 1970s, landing major awards throughout the United States and being asked to sit in with the New York Phil in his 20s. After stints with the New World Symphony Orchestra and the Rochester Philharmonic, he was named principal trumpet with the Montreal Symphony Orchestra and began his teaching career at McGill University. He began releasing a series of solo trumpet albums, including his 2015 French Concertos with the Montreal Symphony Orchestra and Maestro Kent Nagano. It was nominated for a Juno. He went on to tour with the English Chamber Orchestra in 2020. During his years on stage, he's performed with legends like Subban Mehta, Valery Gergiev, and Leonard Bernstein. Last year, he released his fifth solo trumpet effort on Naxos, Arutyunyan, Weinberg, Shostakovich, Trumpet Concertos. It's enjoyed critical acclaim. Joining us this afternoon from his home in Montreal, it is Paul Merkello. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
So I was curious if home is still Montreal. Sometimes if you're a person who tours as much as you do, records, but Montreal's been home for a while.
Yes, I've been here with the orchestra for 27 years now as solo trumpet. I do live in California in the summer because I'm teaching in Santa Barbara at the Music Academy of the West. I've been doing that for the last 17 years. So that's kind of a second home for me, but only in the summer. Montreal is my home.
Let's talk a little bit, go back a little bit and talk about growing up and how trumpet affected you early on. You hear the Chicago Symphony Orchestra, by the way, about to play Kerner Hall here in Toronto, which we're very excited about. The Chicago Symphony Orchestra was sort of your entry point to this career in many ways, growing up where you did. I mean, talk a little bit about that orchestra and that effect that it had for you as a trumpet player.
Yeah, it was incredible because I grew up in Champaign, Illinois. There was no major symphony orchestra in Champaign. It was a 2.5 hour drive to Chicago. But usually once a year, if not twice a year, the Chicago Symphony would come down. We would call it downstate and play in the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, which has an incredible acoustic. In fact, many of the recordings in the 70s, 80s, and even 90s with Sir George Schulte were recorded in the Krannert Center Hall. So that afforded me the opportunity to hear them at least once or twice a year. And then as I got older, I started studying with the first trumpet, Adolf Herseth, also the associate principal, Will Scarlett, and a former player, Vince Chickowitz, a very famous pedagogue. I took lessons from him up in Chicago as well. So in my teen years, I was driving up there on a weekly basis and hearing the orchestra live and taking lessons from the esteemed members of the trumpet section of the Chicago Symphony. And that was a game changer for me, for sure.
I'm curious because coming up through the public school system as I did and joining the school orchestra, school band, I did notice that the horn players tended to look towards jazz often. And I'm curious if that was sort of a fork in the road for you.
It always has been. One of my first teachers was Ray Sasaki, who was the trumpet professor at the time at the University of Illinois. He accepted me when I was 13. Exceptionally, to study with him privately. And he was a master of both jazz, classical, and modern trumpet genres. And so he always encouraged me to improvise. But there was kind of this stigma when I was growing up that, well, if you improvise or you play jazz, it's going to mess up your classical chops. And, you know, the person that just completely put that up on its head was Wynton Marsalis.
I was about to say.
Yeah. So when I started listening and studying Wynton, started in a classical, hearing his classical recordings, but then that led me down the road of like, hey, this guy is playing incredible jazz and improv, and it really made me want to do more of that, which unfortunately I didn't really explore until I got my first job was principal trumpet in the New Orleans Symphony when I was 21, and I started to go to all the jazz clubs in New Orleans, and so that got me on this new path later in life, unfortunately, around my 20s, where I started to, you know, just dabble with improv. And now I'm doing it on a much more regular basis. Very difficult to juggle between playing in the orchestra and teaching and playing solo gigs, classical solo gigs, very difficult to juggle. And I have the utmost respect for Wynton through all these years and his mastery. It's pure mastery on both sides of the coin. I want to say while I'm on that topic, actually, that I'm really, really excited to announce, I can finally announce this, that I will be premiering the Wynton Marsalis Trumpet Concerto that he's writing for myself. It's a co-commission for myself, Håkon Hardenberger, Allison Balsam, and Michael Sachs. So the four of us are going to premiere it in our respective areas of the world. And I'll be doing it here with the Montreal Symphony with our new music director, Rafael Paiotti, August 19th in Maison Symphonique. But I'm just super, super thrilled. And it's a great full circle moment for me to be able to perform and premiere Wynton's brand new trumpet concerto, which I've not yet seen any sketches for, but I'm meeting him in New York in March, and I hope I can pick his brain and maybe see some sketches for that.
Talk about in good company there, not just the composer, but all those trumpet players you just mentioned. I mean, just absolutely astounding. So,
well, I'm so honored. I'm so honored. And you know, I have to thank the Montreal Symphony for setting that up. You know, we talked about composers that I'd really like to have write for the trumpet. And, you know, there's still quite a few people on my dream list, but Wynton was right up there. So, it was the Montreal Symphony that made the introduction. And, it's just, you know, it's a total dream for me that this is actually going to happen.
Something that I've noted, and we've just heard about it here, as you point out, as a teacher, as somebody who's been with the Montreal Symphony Orchestra for a very long time, with various other orchestras, toured around the world, and you've talked about just the level of practice and commitment that you've had to have to get to where you are. And I look at that process and everything you've been able to accomplish, and what do you make of a talent who's young as a trumpeter? Because I look at, for instance, coming across our desk over the last year, Lucien Renaudin-Vary, this young upstart out of France, just 24 years old, a huge spotlight on her right now. And I just wonder about the spotlight on such a young person.
It's always challenging. It's always challenging. I mean, the world has changed so much from when I was in my 20s. You know, the everything's changed. The recording industry has changed. Classical music has been shape-shifting for a while now. Social media has created a whole different platform for people that may not have ever had a platform before, for better or worse. I mean, social media has a way of exposing talents and you know, different skills. And maybe someone who has a strong social media presence that opens the door to maybe a spotlight that they otherwise wouldn't have had. Back in the day, when I was growing up, I mean, recording, it was really that old school mentality of that sort of the recording company would discover the artist and they would pay for everything. And the recording companies and PR companies would drive the image of those individuals. And there were only a handful. If you go down the rabbit hole on YouTube now, there is, you know, I don't even know, I'm just going to guesstimate the thousands of trumpet players that you could have exposure to. And that's really, it's quite remarkable because the exposure now is full throttle. What I'm always trying to tell my younger students is that quality trumps all. Quality is what you've got to be after. Don't try to go for fame. Go for, you know, absolutely playing your heart out, playing beautifully, being a master of your instrument.
I understand exactly the rabbit hole you're talking about. And it is something we see many, many examples of that. And like you say, for better, for worse, I think it's overwhelming for people of a certain age to look at it and say, my goodness, where is this all going? But yeah, I think all you can do as a master yourself and as a great teacher is just hold that bar. For people,
yeah, and I think that's the thing is that you also, as a young player, you have to understand the tradition of where trumpet playing, where it is right now, where did it come from, and what's your responsibility in terms of carrying that torch, right? There has to be a gravitas to what you're doing, in my humble opinion. That doesn't mean there's not room for experimentation and new ways of doing things, but it's got to be done at the highest level. Nothing cheesy. It's got to be amazing playing, an amazing commitment to the craft, to the instrument, and most importantly, to the music making, to really, as I'll go back to what my teacher Adolf Hirst has said a long time ago, tell a story in the way that you play. Don't ask a question when you play, make a statement and believe in your story, and then others will believe you.
You know, looking at projects over the years, you've covered a lot of ground, the Juno-nominated French concertos, for example. But with this record, it's a connection to one of your trumpet heroes as a child and your Ukrainian heritage, and it's been a very personally satisfying project, I would imagine. Tie it together for us at 30,000 feet. What were you looking to say with this particular collection and a specific horn player, I believe?
Well, Timothy Dukshits are Ukrainian-born. My family background is Ukrainian, and so my mother brought home a record only because she read the bio on the back of the vinyl that he was born in Ukraine. And so it just happened that he was, you know, one of the greatest living legends at that time, and he passed away in 2005, unfortunately, but he left a legacy of recordings, and that's what I grew up. I grew up with the Chicago Symphony as a model for my orchestral playing, but some of the real models that I had were Timofey Dukshitser, Wynton Marsalis, Håkon Hardenberger, Thomas Stevens, and there's other people that I could name, but those were some people I really tried to model my playing after. Timofey Dukshitser was a very expressive trumpet player beyond what I was hearing really from anybody else. The level of expression, the romanticism, the singing quality in his playing, alongside the virtuosic capabilities that he had, it just threw me into this dream world, the practice room, to try to imitate what he was doing. So I knew that at some point I wanted to pay some kind of homage, and I would really say that this recording is it. We did this in 2019 before the war in Ukraine broke out. The intention was just to do it as a tribute to Dukshitser. As many of these works were either written for him, or he did the first recording, or he did the first premiere. But since the war in Ukraine broke out, which has been very heartbreaking for me, I decided that, and I asked Naxos, and they gave me the permission, that we would donate all the proceeds from record sales, including downloads, to go to UNICEF for the Children of Ukraine. I front-loaded that with an event at the Ritz-Carlton in Montreal here with 22 of my colleagues from the orchestra. We raised $160,000 in one night.
Wow.
And we are going to try to get to the benchmark of $200,000 with the eventual sales, which is going to take a long time from my recordings, because it just this is not the same world anymore. Mm-hmm. Spotify, you know, you get probably like half a penny for your downloads, but you know, it's going to be a long, slow burn. But I hope that people will be maybe inspired by the cause here, and if they want to go to my website, paulmarcellotrumpet.com, and you order a CD from me, if you actually have a CD player, I will personally sign it for you, and just know that your money is going, all the proceeds are going to UNICEF. And of course, if whatever your streaming platforms are, Spotify or Apple Music, whatever that might be, just know also that if you purchase it there, that those royalties will also go towards UNICEF.
Talk to us about the concertos you chose. We'll start with the Rutunian, nostalgic, found some fame in the West, composed in 1950, a breakthrough for this Armenian composer, a nod to folk music from his region. Let's start with a moment of thought on that particular piece.
Yeah, it's crazy that a trumpet concerto became the place that Alexander Rutunian would hang his hat. You know, that's arguably his most famous work, and it really is a chestnut in our repertoire. And it's something that, I mean, ironically, I just got home today from rehearsing it with the Montreal Symphony. I'm performing it live here on Thursday.
Nice.
So I just got home from rehearsing the Oratunia with Maestro Andrei Boyeko, who is the music director of the Warsaw Philharmonic. And so we've had a fun time collaborating on that this week. And it was really exciting. Today was the first rehearsal with the orchestra. So it's so great to stand up in front of my colleagues and hear that virtuosity and that power of sound behind me and see all my colleagues' friendly faces. It's really, really amazing. But to talk a little bit about this concerto, I mean, this is a concerto I've been studying my whole life. I probably started practicing it when I was 12 or 13 years old. Back in the day, you know, we would do this as a competition piece. And I remember having to memorize it and, you know, having to work through all those double tiny passages in a very disciplined manner back then. And it's just really amazing that I'm still playing this concerto, still trying to get better on it. And it's really one of our most enjoyable pieces. I think also the audience really enjoys this particular trumpet concerto, probably on the same level of enjoyment as maybe the Haydn.
Just going back to Timothy Doctitzer for a moment, I think about some of my musical heroes when I was a young person and how I heard those records and how I listened to those records. And then I think about maybe returning to those records now, you know, 40 years later, what have you. Has that relationship changed with his playing and with your love of those records? I mean, talk about that, putting that space between those original listens.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it's natural that the way you listen is different. I think that when I was younger, I was listening emotionally to the imprint that it was giving me and not understanding how I could reproduce the technical element at that time when I was, whatever, you know, 12. And now I listen to it more. It's more of a rational way that I listen to it. I'm more studying, breaking it down, what he's doing, and I'm maybe coming up with my own signature from that, you know. So this is an homage. This recording is an homage to him, but I definitely tried to put my own interpretation. You know, I just didn't want to redo what he had already done.
Sure.
I wanted to bring my own language, my own voice, my own story to it. It's a very compelling question you ask, and one that I think about a lot. I'm a more critical listener now in classical music than I used to be, for better or worse. When you're young, I think it's important to strive for the innocence and the purity of just listening to something for the feeling. And as you get older, then you just try to become more efficient in everything that you do. So I'm more of a critical listener now, maybe not so much in concert, but definitely when I'm in my studio where I am right now, I'm looking at my wall of recordings and, you know, I pick one out here and there and really study it with the score and really try to get to the roots, the nuts and bolts of what's going on.
I'll ask about Weinberg. I know it was beloved by Shostakovich, and then you have Shostakovich here too. So talk about the Weinberg Trumpet Concerto in B-flat major to start.
Well, Weinberg was born in Poland, and he had to flee when the Nazis were invading. Shostakovich invited him to Moscow, and they actually lived in the same apartment building, which I visited when I was in Moscow recording this album. I also had the great privilege of meeting Mr. Weinberg's widow. She came to all the recording sessions, and we got a chance to talk quite a bit at length about why he wrote this concerto, what his inspirations were. And
wow.
It was written for Timothy Doctitzer, so they all knew each other. The concerto is one that I'm surprised it hasn't been performed more often. It is a masterpiece, and it really exposes all the things that the trumpet can do in terms of virtuosity, volume, power, but also the absolute most beautiful and refined passages that I think I've ever played in any trumpet concerto.
And the Shostakovich, the Concerto No. 1, Opus 35.
So again, Shostakovich and Doctitzer knew each other well, and Timofey was trying to get him to write a trumpet concerto, but for some reason, he didn't do it, and unfortunately, he passed away before he could. So Doctitzer was a celebrated arranger and decided to take it upon himself to do his own version, making it a double concerto for trumpet and piano with strings. And that's the arrangement that we recorded. We found his sketches. He did publish a version for it for trumpet and piano, which I've performed quite often on recitals, but we actually put together an arrangement that we got permission from the Shostakovich estate to release this recording. And we're very, very excited about this particular arrangement. And we are in talks right now with several orchestras around the world. You know, we're hoping to now get this particular arrangement out there in the world, and hopefully people will enjoy it.
Paul Merkello, it's just been a real, real pleasure to speak with you and get some insight on this record. And thank you for being here.
My absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me.